You are listening to Ecotopia on KZFR, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, technological. Tonight's ecosystem connects human values with evolution. How is it that our values develop and emerge? Are we hardwired to adopt some value systems over others? And are human values evolving in positive ways? On the phone with us to discuss these questions is Steve McIntosh. He's author of Evolution's Purpose, an integral interpretation of the scientific story of our origins. It has just been published by Select Books. Steve has formal education in law and is founder and president of a consumer products company. He's a former bicycle racer, and he's a leader in the integral philosophy movement. Welcome, Steve McIntosh.
Thank you, Stephen, for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Please tell us about the idea of integral philosophy. What are some of its aims and tenets? And we'd be kind of curious about your background, bicycle racer to law school to businessman and now a philosopher.
Sure. Well, integral philosophy is a philosophy of evolution which emphasizes the evolution of human consciousness as a central feature of evolution overall. And it's part of a larger emergence of what we frame as the evolutionary worldview, which provides a new perspective on human society and our problems based on an evolutionary perspective. In terms of my background, you know, for all my life I've had an intuition or perhaps an interest in the periods of history that have been sort of fertile for cultural development, you know, whether it be the 5th century B.C. or the Renaissance or in the Enlightenment or even, you know, the emergence of the culture of the 60s. This has always intrigued me, and I've studied these periods of history because I've wanted to participate in an emergence in my own life, and I believe this evolutionary perspective constitutes a historically significant, authentic emergence of a new way of seeing.
So I'm curious about your notion that a theory of evolution must be more than just science. To be complete, you were talking about how it's linked to human history and to our morals, values, and cultures. Could you go into more detail about that?
Absolutely.
And just what do you mean by more than science? Culture, science versus culture? Yes,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, the way integral philosophy defines evolution is as the universe's ceaseless process of becoming. That is, evolution is certainly includes Darwin's conception of the descent with modification of biological species. But in the last several decades, science itself has come to really see that everything in the universe is subject to evolution. Mm-hmm. So, for example, for the last 13.7 billion years, since the beginning of time and space and matter and energy with the Big Bang, we've seen three large domains of evolution, right? First, there's the evolution of matter mm-hmm. through at the micro level through atoms and molecules, at the macro level through stars and planets. And then on this planet, and likely elsewhere in the universe, there is the momentous emergence of life, which in a sense creates a new category of evolution, right? Life evolves using different methods, and once it gets going, it evolves at a faster pace than the previous level of cosmological evolution. But even though we can't conflate these two types of evolution, the evolution of matter and the evolution of life, what ties them together is the phenomenon of emergence. That is, we start with the debris of the Big Bang, which is just hydrogen atoms and a little bit of helium. And then throughout the history of the universe, there's this sequence of radically novel emergences whereby something more keeps coming from something less. Something more complex continues to emerge. And not only do new levels of complexity emerge in the course of evolution, but there's a sort of an effect whereby every new emergence, whether it's the emergence of, you know, second-generation stars from first-generation stars or the emergence of life from you know, non-living matter, there's a way in which every new level of emergence takes up and uses the accomplishments of previous levels. And we can see this literally in our own bodies, in the way our bodies are made of atoms, but the atoms, in a sense, transcend and are transcended and included by molecules, which are, in a sense, the building blocks of cells. So there's this sequence of emergence that builds on itself and grows more complex, and we're using these emergences within the sequence of our own bodies. But evolution doesn't stop with life. We see another significant emergence in the emergence of humanity, which, again, is more than biological evolution. It can't be reduced to biological evolution. But what makes the evolution of human culture, human history, indeed human consciousness, what makes that real evolution is that, like all other forms of evolution, we're building on and using the accomplishments of previous levels. So just like life relies on the accomplishments of cosmological evolution, human cultural evolution relies on the accomplishments of biological evolution. We're evolving our society because we have these marvelous bodies and brains that allow us to have the consciousness and indeed the freedom to improve the human condition. Go on.
Well, I'm wondering, does evolution, it means greater complexity, and it means bigger than just the kind of physical universe, but for both of those, does more complex mean improved?
Well, that's an excellent question. A lot of scientists have tried to find exterior or external ways to measure the growth of evolution. I mean, in other words, what can we say is happening in evolution where something more keeps coming from something less? And complexity is a term that's been proposed, but complexity is very difficult to measure. Because sometimes something can be improved by becoming less complex, right? Sometimes mm-hmm. the direction of evolution is towards simplicity. Mm-hmm. So complexity is kind of a clunky and overly materialistic evaluator, which is useful to an extent, but I don't think it's the final word on really what evolution is doing or what it's accomplishing.
You mentioned coevolution in your book. Do these cultural changes eventually become hardwired into the genetic system? Or are they, as you said, we've got marvelous bodies. We can do, we're both former English teachers, and we mm-hmm. marvel at the coevolution of language. We have voice boxes, so we speak. We speak, so we use our voice boxes more effectively. But I'm curious then where you see genetics fitting into the evolutionary process.
Sure. Well, for animals to get smarter, for animals to become more consciously aware, more creative, more intelligent, they have to basically evolve their bodies. In other words, their consciousness evolves relatively in lockstep with their bodies. While animals can learn and they can pass on learning to their offspring to a degree, mm-hmm. that biological determinism is really first dramatically transcendent with the emergence of human consciousness, because humans have demonstrated their ability to evolve their consciousness beyond their biology. So whatever evolution the human brain may have gone through, the physical, biological evolution it may have gone through in the last, say, 10,000 years, this by itself cannot account for the astonishing evolution of consciousness that humanity, at least in some parts of the world, have been able to achieve over this same period. And so it's because we can evolve our culture, we some ways we're able to transcend our biology, even while we depend on it, we can still transcend it in that we don't have to evolve our brains, we don't have to have a hardwiring neurons to allow for the evolution of our consciousness. While we use more of our brain, while we hook up and wire together more of our brain when our consciousness evolves, what's causing that evolution is not the evolution of the wetware, it's the independent evolution of the software, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the things that are evolving in humans in consciousness? Are these awarenesses, senses, values? What can we see that's changing
sure.
in human consciousness?
Well, the evidence that the evolution of human consciousness and culture is real evolution, having an irreversible effect upon the universe, is our global civilization, right, which is now has come to encompass the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this global civilization has evolved on both the outside through artifacts and technologies mm-hmm. and institutions, but it's also evolved on the inside through, as I described, this human evolution of our awareness. And an important part of how we evolve our internal consciousness, how our awareness grows, how our sentience and subjectivity expands, mm-hmm. is through the evolution of values-based worldviews. In other words, a worldview is a reality frame. And humans throughout history have worked within given reality frames to try to improve their conditions. But the most dramatic ways they've been able to improve their conditions is by improving their definition of improvement itself. In other words, by transcending a given worldview to draw a larger circle of reality, a more inclusive reality frame that has a more expanded understanding of what's real and what's true and beautiful and good. You know, the example I can give, a couple of examples.
Yes,
one,
please.
One would be the evolution of goodness or morality,
okay.
Right? In the Stone Age cultural situations, usually those who are worthy of moral consideration are those who are part of the kinship group, right, the tribe or the clan, mm-hmm. and those who are outside that kinship group are typically seen as the enemy and not deserving of the same moral consideration of those within the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
But then we see the emergence of new stages, of new kinds of reality frames where the those who are worthy of moral consideration go from a sort of a family-centric or tribal-centric conception to a more ethnocentric conception, those
mm-hmm.
who belong to the same religion.
Mm-hmm.
Are, even though they may come from different kinship groups, are then worthy of moral consideration. And even though we look down at ethnocentric morality as something we want to transcend today,
right.
In the course of human history, it was a big step forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we move from ethnocentric to nationalistic conceptions of morality where, you know, Americans are, every American is worth the moral consideration more than people of foreign countries. And then beyond that, we can see an emergence into a more world-centric morality where those worthy of moral consideration include, you know, all sentient beings. So that's an example of how worldview systems emerge and become more inclusive in their ability to evaluate. We can see the same thing happening with truth, right? In a tribal level, truth is there's a sort of a magical worldview, and what's true is considered, you know, there's a sort of an animistic religion that looks for the world and it looks at the world in a very magical way. And then that we move from magical to mythical, right? And then with the great religious civilizations, there's a sort of a mythic conception of what's real. And then with the emergence of modernism, we move to a kind of a scientific rational conception of what's real, and our expansion of what's true, our ability to know what's true, grows in an exponential way. And now, with progressive culture, we're beginning to recognize an understanding of truth which goes beyond merely materialistic scientific rationalism and has a more holistic conception of what's true.
So who are you talking about when you say we? Is this true of all cultures and all people living in the earth today? Are some cultures more evolved than other cultures? Are educated people more evolved than people who have no schooling, whatever?
Well, this is the concept of more evolved. In the book, I carefully argue that evolution is moving in the direction of increasing value. But I'm also careful to distinguish earlier ethnocentric notions of cultural superiority that colored Victorian conceptions of progress and which looked down on less developed people as
right.
being less morally worthy.
Right. All and, colonialism
and,
is
right,
based
exactly.
in that.
And
yeah.
these kind of immature conceptions of progress in cultural evolution led to horrific disasters like colonialism and imperialism. And so it's very there was a step forward beyond that when a more postmodern perspective began to see that, no, we don't want to have a ranking of cultures. We want to have multiculturalism where we value all forms of culture. We value diversity. And you know, that value relativism was, ironically, evidence of cultural evolution. That was a positive step forward. But if we just rest in value relativism as a cure to ethnocentrism, then we can become blind to comparative excellence. So one of the things that integral philosophy is attempting to do, and I argue carefully for this in the book, is we want to reclaim a vertical dimension of development because we're all trying to make the world a better place. But we want to do it in a way that also includes the important evolutionary accomplishments of multiculturalism and the value of diversity. And so we have to value in two ways. We have to value that which is more inclusive, that which has a greater grasp on reality. But we also have to value earlier stages because they're appropriate to their life conditions and they have enduring values that we want to carry forward into the future. So when we talk about evolution growing more valuable, it's growing more valuable in multi-dimensions, and we don't want to have a sort of a simplistic, unilinear conception of progress. We want to understand how all cultures deserve value, and indeed, if we're going to move forward in our own cultural evolution, one of the most direct ways we can do that is to reclaim values of earlier stages of history that have been lost in the process. So we're sort of reaching down at the same time that we're reaching up, and we're recognizing that the degree of our transcendence is, in a sense, measured by the scope of our inclusion. And this is one of the techniques of integral philosophy, is to sort of appreciate all the stages of cultural evolution without becoming strict value relativists in the process.
We're talking with Steve McIntosh. He's the author of Evolution's Purpose. In the book, Steve, you cite Stephen Jay Gould a number of times, and he has argued in The Mismeasure of Man particularly that it's an error to perceive of evolution as making progress, and he's especially critical of the notion that somehow humans, and I would assume human cultures, are at the apex, that evolution has been beating a path to our door. How does your view differ from Gould's as you talk about getting away from relativistic values?
Right. Well, The first step is to understand evolution as not merely biological evolution, that evolution encompasses the development of the cosmos, the development of the biosphere, and now the development of what's known as the noosphere, or the psychosocial layer of humanity. And it's important to understand that there, as I mentioned earlier, that there have been abuses of the idea of progress. It's been used to justify colonialism. And so many of the objections which Gould raises, he's raising for good reasons. In other words, he's trying to make us more moral in our own way and undo some of these problems of history. However, the idea that evolution has not created any value creates big problems if you want to have environmental ethics. I mean, I understand Gould, although he's made good contributions to our understanding of evolution through his theories such as punctuated equilibrium, his philosophy was existentialist. And existentialism is a materialist philosophy, which claims that all values are merely subjective, that values are simply the projections of human preferences, and there's no objective value in the world. And that move toward the subjectification of all value was in response to pre-modern conceptions of absolute value, which were oppressive in their own way. But the idea that humans are, you know, values only brought into the world through human preferences, it creates a variety of difficult problems. For example, if we want to have an environmental ethic that values nature, if we can't find a natural value in nature, if nature is only valuable because humans perceive it as valuable, then that has a tendency to render the natural value of the biological world sort of merely instrumental for human use. And our basic moral intuition tells us that the biological world does have natural value before humans come along. And so in the book, I argue that values are neither entirely subjective nor entirely objective. They're like a circuit. They bring subject and object together, like electricity has a negative pole and a positive pole that brings it into existence. Values are like that too. They're relational structures. And so because they have a subjective pole, they do require consciousness to recognize them. But consciousness doesn't just make value, it also finds value. The ontological quality of the universe is found within the natural world. But if we broaden our understanding of evolution to include humanity, and we can see how much good humans have done, despite the fact that for every good there's also a bad, despite that there's there's pathology that goes with the progress, the idea that humans have not brought the beautiful, the true, and the good into the world, both through their, by recognizing it and by creating it, I think is really philosophically incoherent. So, go on.
No, I want you to finish your thought, but if I've interrupted it.
No, that's fine. In other words, Gould was in his philosophy, he was trying to correct some of the wrongs of history. But because he had a flattened materialistic view, because he had an existential philosophy that couldn't recognize the spiritual quality of the universe, then his move was to try to deny all value in the natural world. And in my book, I rehabilitate the idea of progress by showing that evolution is a tremendous generator of value, and it's been generating value that's been building on itself through positive creativity throughout its entire 13 billion year course of unfolding.
I'm with you on a lot of these things, that there are people who are devoting their lives to truth, beauty, goodness, and the we seems to be people who have the time, the energy, the culture, the understanding, the knowledge to focus on a spiritual life. For some people, focusing on a spiritual life is not possible because they're number one, enculturated to such a degree, the kind of tribal description that you had is true for them. And we have a lot of examples of ethnic cleansing. We have a lot of examples of people starving, of not getting basic water. And for those people, I think that those, and I don't want to turn this back into, you know, a relativist argument again, but I don't know that that is true of the evolution of their values. So I'm asking, is it?
Sure. No, excellent question. I mean, that's the evolution is the creation story of our age. It's extremely culturally relevant.
Yes.
And it's very important that we understand it more deeply than, you know, scientific materialism has allowed us to understand it. And so we're not regressing to a mythic religious worldview. We're trying to understand the creation story of our age because there's so much truth contained in what science and history has delivered in terms of our origins. We understand our origins more clearly than ever before, and there's so much truth in this revelation of evolution that it's not just scientific facts. There's also a spiritual message, and the spiritual message of evolution is seen in its directions of progress as humans, being part of evolution, are trying to make their world a better place by making it more beautiful, true, and good, even though these values are defined by these worldview structures, which themselves go through evolution. So, you know, the beautiful, the true, and the good are not fixed or absolute. They're directions of evolution, which are in the process of discovery by humanity throughout the course of its evolution. And so, even though we're all alive here in the year 2012, not all of us live in the same time in history in this planet. You know, some of us are living within cultures that first emerged thousands of years ago, right? And then
I get it. Go ahead.
So these stages of development, these structures of evolution, these sort of sequences of emergences that have occurred within human history can be understood more thoroughly from an evolutionary perspective because we can see the point of cultural evolution is to try to improve the human condition. And what counts as improvement depends on the problems that people encounter on the ground. So if people are encountering tribal conditions, a lot of times what can make them what can improve their conditions is by adopting the next available stage of cultural evolution that has been laid down in the course of human history. So in sub-Saharan Africa, many people raised in tribal settings are choosing to improve their conditions by adopting Protestant Christianity, for example. Mm-hmm. And even though those of us in the West might look at that with some concern because we, you know, there's lots of pathologies that go with that, homophobia and, you know, ethnocentrism. Right. But for those people, this is the way that they perceive to improve their conditions. They can't just make the leap directly from a pre-traditional worldview to a postmodern worldview because evolution proceeds according to this sequence of emergences. And so we can be more compassionate towards these people. We can appreciate them better if we situate them within this course of evolution, even while recognizing that there's not a unilinear kind of upward escalator to the good. And mm-hmm. as people try to improve their conditions using these worldviews, they create new problems. There's what I describe in the book as a dialectic of progress and pathology, so that every time we make progress in a new worldview,
right.
those very improvements carry with them new problems, which can only be solved by still further evolution. Right, so the developed world brought about by the modernist worldview has produced more cultural evolution than any worldview before or since. But it's also produced horrific problems which now threaten the entire world, right? Climate change and nuclear proliferation. And these are serious problems which are only going to be solved by further cultural evolution. And this is part of what this evolutionary worldview is emerging to do, is to try to make the world a better place, a more evolved place, through a deeper understanding of evolution itself.
Our guest this evening has been Steve McIntosh. He's the author of Evolution's Purpose, an Integral Interpretation of the Scientific Story of Our Origins, published by Select Books. You can learn more about the book at www.selectbooks.com and more about Steve and the Integral Philosophy Movement at www.stevemcintosh.com. And we will post those links on our website. Steve, as we both predicted, we've given you too little time tonight to talk about all these issues, but we hope it's tempted some listeners to look at evolution's purpose in new ways. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate your interest in my work.
Great discussion. Thanks.
All right.